This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The 2014 election cycle saw unprecedented fundraising by political action committees in Michigan. And with it came a major increase in money raised by the so-called super PACs, the independent expenditure committees free to accept corporate and union contributions. Rich Robinson of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network is here with us. It's a nonpartisan watchdog group that tracks campaign and lobbying money. You've just released a report that finds $68 million raised by Michigan's top 150 PACs.
It's an indication of the trend in elections generally, whether we're talking about federal elections, state elections, or even in some cases now local elections, that the candidates' campaign committees are being overwhelmed by the spending of independent groups. When you look at it, that's because the candidates' committees are subject to limits on how much an individual donor or a political committee can give to the committee. They are also subject to limits as to the source, that they can only take money from humans or political committees that collect money only from humans. Super PACs don't have any limits on contributions going in, no limits on what they can spend, and there aren't really any effective limits on sources. They can take money from a profit-making corporation, a nonprofit corporation, a union corporation, a wealthy individual, whatever it is. And it means that large donors, those who are able to write six- and seven-figure checks, are dominating these political campaigns, and I would submit they're probably dominating the policy results after Election Day.
Getting into the super PACs, you've seen just an incredible increase in the number of super PACs. When you think that it was only in 2010 when the Citizens United and SpeechNow rulings came down from the U.S. Supreme Court and made this possible, boy, they've become a huge presence in a short amount of time.
Well, they really have. In 2010, there were a couple groups that were kind of dipping their toe in the water. This time around, 20 of the top 40 PACs on this list of the top PACs in Michigan are super PACs. And a lot of them were kind of pop-up PACs. They didn't exist in the state of Michigan prior to this election cycle. A number of them have already dissolved and left, but they left a huge footprint on this election, and much of it wasn't visible until last week when these PACs filed their February reports. We have a very peculiar and ineffective disclosure requirement for the independent expenditures by political action committees. If it was a special election, they'd have to be reported in 48 hours. In a federal election, independent expenditures are reported in 24 hours. But these groups, any independent expenditures they made after October 20th weren't reported until February 18th, 100 days after Election Day. So the idea that citizens are able to track who's putting the money into campaigns really is laughable. We're nowhere near that kind of transparency.
And we've seen the Center for Public Integrity serving up a grade of F, failing for the state of Michigan when it comes to transparency and campaign finance reporting, saying Michigan's campaign donation restrictions, I love the way they put this, are nothing more than speed bumps for political high rollers.
Well, I think that's right. And I do know that Center for Public Integrity study is being redone this year. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have much progress to show either in lobbying disclosure or campaign finance disclosure.
When you looked at the fundraising by the top PACs, who are the big hitters? Who were some of the heavy, heavy hitters in PACs or super PACs?
Number one on the list was the RGA Michigan PAC, the Republican Governors Association, but that one, strangely enough, raised $4.6 million, returned $4.2 million to its parent organization. Now, the parent organization went on to spend $10 million for TV ads in Michigan's gubernatorial campaign. But it's kind of a fake bookkeeping.
Yeah, sounds like a shell game, kind of.
It really is a shell game. And among the PACs that are consistently present on the top of this list, each of the legislative caucuses has one PAC that raises money to support its members and candidates. They're always near the top. One of the newcomers that was near the top was Turnaround Detroit, which was a single candidate super PAC that supported Mike Duggan in the 2013 Detroit mayoral campaign. And his opponent in that race, Benny Napoleon, had a single candidate super PAC behind him, and Warren Evans had a super PAC behind him in his Wayne County executive campaign in 2014. There are some interest groups from Michigan that are persistently on this list, the United Auto Workers, the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Auto Dealers of Michigan, and the like. They're present, and we know they have interests in what goes on and who gets elected. But it's these pop-up PACs that have really thrown a new wrinkle into the whole idea of how campaigns are funded and what is the nature of transparency and accountability in politics.
And, you know, Rich, going back to when Rick Snyder was running to become Governor Snyder, boy, there was a lot of talk about greater transparency and regulating issue advertising and banning gifts from lobbyists. And then he got into office and...
He went native in about 1 week. He set up his own 501c4 corporation. Kind of the ethical lapse culminated in signing a campaign finance bill into law in December 2013 that prevented the Secretary of State from proceeding with a new interpretation of the Campaign Finance Act that would have been more faithful to the language of the statute. That language was amended by the legislature, and he signed the bill into law, unfortunately.
Lawmakers certainly have not shown an appetite for reform and, you know, wanting more transparency. But I've seen you quoted as saying citizens have so far shown little interest in reforms as well. Why do you think that is?
It's confounding, honestly. And I think if we could get some interest, get some money behind the idea of reform, it would resonate with citizens. Average citizens are missing the point now that huge interest groups, wealthy individuals, are dominating politics in a way that serves them and not the broad public interest. But so far, we just don't have the kind of organization that it would take to make a citizens reform. And I see no promise in the legislature, whatever.
You know, your work with the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has made you the premier eye on campaign and lobbyist spending in the state. Why are you the only one?
Well, I'm not sure. One thing is the access to the data is a little bit clunky. The interface for querying the state's campaign finance records hasn't changed, really, in 15 years, and it's not what one would call user-friendly. A lot of media outlets and reporters use the data and information that I provide in their own reporting, and a lot of reporters are a lot better at following campaign finance than what they were 10 years ago. But for me, even though the prospects for reform are not particularly bright right now, I think it's very important that a record be established of exactly how these committees are working, how the nature of campaign funding works. So when there is a taste for reform, and there'll be a scandal, and then there'll be a taste for reform, we have a record and we know how to correct it.
Rich Robinson, Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Rich, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.